long as we're clear on that.
Morning. This meeting of the Rules Committee is called to order, and I'll note for the committee record that there is a quorum present. Would anybody care to move the minutes from Thursday, May 4th?
So moved, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Leader Damuth. Any discussion to the minutes? Seeing none, all in favor, please say aye.
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 Opposed? The minutes are adopted. Well, members, we have guests in our Rules Committee today. It's an exciting, we're, you know, normally lonely down in here in Rules, so welcome everyone. We have up on our agenda House File 1900. Vice Chair Hollins, would you care to move your bill and the recommendation that it be referred to the General Register?
Yes, Mr. Chair. Thank you for that. I appreciate it. That is my motion.
All right. The bill is before us. Vice Chair Hollins, please present your bill.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Mr. Chair, and thank you, committee members. I am here today to ask for your support in passing the Environment and Natural Resources Trust Fund, which is a renewal of the lottery dedication that was first originated back in 1988. This trust fund was created for the public purpose of protection, conservation, preservation, and enhancement of the state's air, water, land, fish, wildlife, and other natural resources. And over the last three decades, it's helped fund dozens of important projects that do that across the state of Minnesota. In fact, we could probably find a project that has either touched or has been in one of your districts, almost all of your districts. I am incredibly excited to be here today and to be moving for this reauthorization, and I want to just highlight a couple of small things. So when it first was created, it was passed with overwhelming support from the voters, and when it was rededicated after a decade, it was also passed, and now it is time to do that again for the 2024 ballot. Public opinion shows that Minnesotans like knowing that lottery proceeds are going towards environment and natural resources, with over 82% of support statewide continuing for this constitutional dedication. And in fact, my understanding is when we first got a lottery program, part of the deal in actually being able to pass that was that some of this money, that 50% of the proceeds from that would be going into environment and natural resources, which totally tracks to me because Minnesotans love being outdoors. So the lottery is tied with that. That's why it's got the little loon picture on there, because the money goes to the environment and natural resources. There's a couple of small changes in here that I just wanted to make sure that we highlighted. In particular, I wanted to highlight the community grants program, because I'm sure there are going to be questions about this. The community grants program doesn't cost anything extra. It's just an additional program that we've tied to the Environment and Natural Resources Trust Fund. What was happening was a lot of smaller organizations that are both within the Twin Cities but also in greater Minnesota weren't able to access the funds through the typical process of the LCCMR, because it is a very time-intensive process to go through that. If you look at the LCCMR, most of the funding that goes through there are from big organizations like the U of M, but also these larger organizations like Ducks Unlimited and things like that, who have the funding to put money forward in this process and to like look for reimbursement for the things that they're doing. Smaller organizations don't have that ability to do that, and so in fact it really has limited their ability to participate in this, even though they are good projects and they are all across the entire state. And so we worked really closely with some of those larger advocates and organizations, as well as with the DNR, to create a community grants program that would be able to fund some of these smaller projects and smaller organizations so that they can hopefully create a pipeline so they are larger and able to participate in the full LCCMR process in the future. The other thing that I wanted to note is that we are increasing the amount that can be drawn from the trust fund, so increasing it from 5.5 to 7%. And what this does is just make it more possible to, it supports the increased revenue deposited to the fund, and then also it keeps up with inflation, right? Like 5.5 just wasn't doing it. It wasn't effective for the things that people needed to get done, so this increases the amount that we are able to draw on that. I'm happy to answer any other questions, but I also have a number of testifiers here, and I would like to yield most of my time to them.
Thank you so much, Vice Chair Hollins. We do have 10 folks who've signed up to testify today, and so I'll ask folks to keep it to no more than 2 minutes each, please. And we'll start with Nels Paulson, Conservation Minnesota.
Mr. Chair, can you have the volume turned up in here? It's so soft. I can barely hear it.
We'll do what we can. Thank you. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name and proceed.
You bet. Good morning, Mr. Chair and members.
Sorry.
Yeah. Good morning, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Nels Paulson. I'm the Policy Director at Conservation Minnesota. We help lead a coalition of dozens of organizations who support constitutionally rededicating a portion of state lottery proceeds into the Environment and Natural Resources Trust Fund. Three times since 1988, voters have said yes, they would like a portion of the state lottery proceeds to help supplement the state budget and specifically pay for additional activities that protect, conserve, preserve, and enhance Minnesota's air, water, land, fish, wildlife, and other natural resources. Our renewal coalition has been joined by over 100 local governments, nonprofits, elected leaders, and others in supporting the constitutional rededication of state lottery proceeds before that dedication expires in 2025. The bill does not alter the existing Legislative Citizen Commission on Minnesota Resources, or LCCMR, but this bill does create a new pathway for interested Minnesotans to access state lottery proceeds through the new Environment and Natural Resources Trust Fund Community Grant Program. Our coalition wants to see 25 more years of dedicated state lottery funding to help maintain, enhance, and enjoy Minnesota's environment and natural resources, and we ask for your support.
Thank you so much. Next is Mary Robinson, Department of Natural Resources.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Mary Robinson. I'm the Chief Financial Officer for the Department of Natural Resources. Certainly, the Department of Natural Resources supports the extension of the Environment and Natural Resources Trust Fund. Regarding the language in this bill around the Community Grants Program, we have had an opportunity to work with Representative Hollins on this language. And with the current language, we are confident that we will be able to administer this grant program as intended to reach underserved communities while also making sure that we have appropriate fiscal controls in place as the fiscally cognizant and responsible agency. I'm happy to take any questions in this regard. Otherwise, I'll just thank you for having me today.
Well, we certainly will take questions, and you can be available at the end, perhaps. Thank you. Next, we have Mike Verhoeven, Backcountry Hunters and Anglers. Welcome to the committee.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and the committee. My name is Mike Verhoeven. I'm a hunter, a trapper, and an angler, and I'm a board member for Minnesota's Backcountry Hunters and Anglers organization. Our organization strives to ensure hunting and angling remain accessible to every Minnesotan. To do this, we speak up and show up to fight for wild public lands, waters, and the fish and wildlife that live there. From boots on the ground work to showing up here today, our membership across the state believes that we only have one great outdoors and that we must do right by it. This bill, this effort, and these dollars do right by the great outdoors. Our organization strives to educate all, from anglers to policymakers, about the importance of publicly accessible lands and waters. We work to secure access to these places for every Minnesotan, including those not traditionally included, and the generations of proud outdoor recreating Minnesotans yet to come. We work to promote the overall health, conservation, and restoration of these places, specifically pushing for the management of these spaces and resources based on scientific guidance and scientific best practices. And we work to encourage the health and well-being of Minnesotans through the consumption of the wild and wholesome foods harvested from Minnesota's prairies, forests, wetlands, and waters. Like everyone, our organization's dollars and time for our volunteers is limited, so we scour your work, looking for policy initiatives that can move the ball forward on even just one of our organization's goals. Not many pieces of public policy can so thoroughly tick through our goals, as does HF 1900. I'm here to speak up for our public lands and waters, and to say on behalf of our members, we support asking Minnesotans what they think about pointing these dollars at our great outdoors. When you ask, you can expect a resounding yes. Thanks to Chair Long for hearing the bill and Representative Hollins and all authors for their support.
Thank you very much. Next, we have Cecilia Calvo, Minnesota Environmental Partnership. And on deck is Trevor Russell. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you. Good morning, Mr. Chair, Madam Vice Chair, and members of the committee. My name is Cecilia Calvo, and I'm the Director of Advocacy and Inclusion at the Minnesota Environmental Partnership. MEP is a statewide coalition of over 70 environmental and conservation organizations and other partner organizations that are working together for clean air and water, clean energy, and a healthy environment for all Minnesotans. On behalf of MEP and our ENRTF Reauthorization Coalition, I am here to express our support for this bill and to urge you to reauthorize the Environment Natural Resources Trust Fund and create a new community grants program. The ENRTF Reauthorization Coalition brings together leaders from the Black community, the Latino community, tribal nations, rural communities, and mainstream environmental and conservation nonprofits. We have been listening to community leaders to develop a community grants program. This is what community leaders have said. We need a program that responds to the needs of environmental justice communities who are overburdened by pollution, that listens to the solutions we hold to protect our clean water and air, creating more green spaces, reducing pollution, creating urban gardens, and improving access to healthy foods, that reduces the systemic barriers to accessing these funds. Currently, accessing ENRTF funding through the LCCMR is a lengthy, complex process that is difficult to navigate. A reimbursement-based grant program versus providing upfront money for projects. Small community grants groups, community-based groups, often do not have the financial resources and the time and capacity that the current process requires. As a Latina woman who is the daughter of parents who immigrated from Peru, I understand these processes can be intimidating, difficult to understand, and language barriers add to this. The Community Grants Program will open the doors wider for people who have historically been left out of the process and have not been able to access these state dollars. As legislative leaders, I urge you to take this unique opportunity to enhance Minnesota's air, land, and water in a way that all Minnesotans are a part of. Thank you for your time, and thank you for your commitment to this work.
Thank you. Next, we have Trevor Russell, Friends of the Mississippi River, followed by Rob Schultz. Welcome to the committee.
Greetings, Mr. Chair, members. My name is Trevor Russell. I'm the Water Program Director with Friends of the Mississippi River. As you know, for three decades, the Environment and Natural Resources Trust Fund, or ENRTF, has helped Minnesotans, including organizations like ours, carry on a tradition of protecting our land, restoring habitat, and improving water quality across the state. The Trust Fund has made it possible for FMR and our partners to work at dozens of sites along the main stem Mississippi River and its tributaries. And this has allowed us to work with volunteers to restore hundreds of acres of habitat and tackle important research topics that affect statewide habitat, wildlife, and water quality. Thanks in part to the dedication of net lottery proceeds, the Trust Fund has funded over $900 million in projects for Minnesota's natural resources. Unfortunately, as you know, this lottery dedication to the great outdoors will sunset if not renewed by 2025. So our message to this committee is twofold. First, we are very grateful to the leadership of Representative Hollins and Senator Herr and the other body in bringing forward legislation to put the lottery dedication on the ballot as a constitutional amendment in 2024. We feel that the chance to renew dedication of lottery funds is an opportunity that we cannot afford to miss. And the second is that we strongly support the Community Grants Program to ensure funding opportunities for underserved communities that have historically not had adequate access to this important source of funding. Renewing state lottery proceeds is an opportunity we can't afford to miss. I'm confident that if you give Minnesotans the chance to vote, they will decide to dedicate these funds to the great outdoors. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Next, we will hear from Rob Schultz with Audubon Society, followed by Carrie Jennings. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you. Chair and members of the House Rules Committee, my name is Rob Schultz. I'm a resident of District 39A in Fridley, and I serve as Executive Director of Audubon, Minnesota. I'm here today in support of House File 1900 to reauthorize the ENRTF. The trust fund is an important vehicle that allows the public to invest in protecting and enhancing our state's natural resources through the Minnesota State Lottery proceeds. It broadens the field of people working to advance conservation by engaging nonprofit and education institutions as well as local municipalities. The results of the funds of this work since it was started in 1988 have been quite impressive in leveraging on-the-ground conservation work, science, and environmental education for the benefit of wildlife and Minnesotans alike. At Audubon, we empower our 26,000 members in Minnesota to work on behalf of birds through a network of independent chapters across our state, through more than a 100-year history of citizen science that monitors bird populations, and by conducting statewide and regional habitat restoration projects that benefit birds and wildlife. In the past, we've received funding from the ENRTF to conduct avian monitoring, and this allows us to assess how birds utilize restored environments and improve conservation restoration practices that are used by our organization, agencies, and others. We've also worked to survey marsh birds and understand their population trends, and then to evaluate Minnesota's focal species, such as the black tern, the yellow rail, the common rail. These are species that are listed as threatened or of special concern in the DNR's Wildlife Action Plan. This work is important because bird populations in Minnesota and across North America are under extreme pressure right now. It's heartbreaking to see that in my lifetime, the population of birds in North America has declined by 25%, or roughly 3 billion birds. And we're seeing that significantly here in Minnesota. The Environment and Natural Resources Trust Fund is critical in providing the tools necessary to address these issues and protect our natural resources. We are passionate about the community grants program because it will make this funding more accessible to smaller organizations in rural and metro communities that may not have the resources otherwise to participate. There's also a significant need to make ENRTF funding more accessible to organizations serving BIPOC communities. Community grants will make ENRTF funding opportunities more equitable and will ignite a new generation of stewardship for our natural resources. Thank you for your consideration.
Thank you. Next, we'll hear from Carrie Jennings with Freshwater, followed by Mike Harley. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Carrie Jennings. I'm the Research and Policy Director at Freshwater. We're a nonprofit focused on science-backed policy initiatives and empowering citizens to protect their water. I'm here to speak to the way the ENRTF has transformed the way science is done in the state of Minnesota. I've witnessed over the last 30 years the way that the funds have been used to help us understand the baseline conditions and the environmental challenges that we face in Minnesota, and that has helped our agencies direct restoration and protection dollars more effectively. The projects that are advanced to the LCCMR are Minnesota-specific. The review process for these projects has also evolved over the years, and now there's robust external review of these really kind of technical things that is they are hard to rank, really, without some external review. What we also see is that when the dollars are awarded, they grow local academic talent. You get a really good bang for the buck when you invest in academics who are training graduate students, because those graduate students become specialists in the environmental concerns of the area, and many of them remain to take academic positions locally or populate our state agencies. So I think these are things that probably aren't as obvious to you when these projects are funded. The projects are also hosted on a website, and they're accessible to people to refer to. So there's this great database of local research that people can return to. I think also that what we have seen at Freshwater, we've started to work across the Great Lakes states from here to Ohio, and we're seeing that the scientific knowledge production in Minnesota far exceeds any of the other states in the region. We're looked to as a leader. And the other states don't know what they don't know because they haven't done this prioritization of monitoring. So from invasive species to emerging contaminants, the projects that ENRTF has funded have identified key gaps and needs, and our state agencies have responded. So it's not just building knowledge, but also the capacity for the state to continue to address these challenges. Thank you.
Thank you. Next, we'll hear from Mike Harley with Environmental Initiative, and we'll be followed by Kateri Ruth. Welcome to the committee.
Good morning. Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I am Mike Harley. I'm Executive Director at Environmental Initiative. We're a 31-year-old organization that catalyzes collaboration across perspectives, power, and systems for social equity and environmental health. I urge you, I'm here to urge you to reauthorize the Environment and Natural Resource Trust Fund and to create the new community grants program. That is going to be a powerful way to provide greater access to grant dollars for the communities that are most essential in a healthy environment and a prosperous state. While it's uncommon for our organization to advocate directly on behalf of specific legislation, we're moved to be here today to do exactly that. And the reason is because of the powerful potential of the proposal that you have before you. We are part of a robust Environment and Natural Resources Trust Fund Reauthorization Coalition that includes leaders from the Black community, the Latino community, tribal nations, rural communities, as well as conservation and environmental organizations. This coalition has set their collective sights on fair and equitable access to environmental funding, and our proposal for the community grants program is intended to that end. The idea for this grants program emerged from the BIPOC and rural members of our coalition and has been embraced by the entire coalition. It has been our honor as an organization to work side by side with Dr. Sam Grant to co-convene the core group that has been developing this proposal for a community grants program. That core group includes very active members from the Red Lake Nation, from COPAL, from Rainbow Research, from Public Policy Project, from the Environmental Justice Coordinating Councils in St. Paul and in North Minneapolis, from the Initiative Foundation in Little Falls, and many other organizations. Members of our coalition from BIPOC and rural communities have showed up to support this proposal throughout the session and testified in every other hearing before today, and they have been deeply investing their time in this proposal all throughout the session. Many of these individuals hoped to be here today and tried to be here today, but the pace and the dynamic schedule here at the legislature can stand in the way of community leaders showing up and sharing their voice with you in conversations like this, and I know that you know that. This is certainly true for a hearing like today, and it is even more true for a complex and lengthy process like LCCMR. What works for mainstream organizations does not often work for small community-based organizations. If you don't have a lobbyist, if you don't have staff in the Twin Cities, if you don't have the money to invest in a fundraising process that extends well over a year, if you don't have the resources to spend money upfront and then wait for reimbursement, then on a practical basis, LCCMR is not accessible to you, whether or not you are eligible. This is why we are proposing the creation of a new program that is meant to support the efforts of the organizations who need that access in order to do the good work that they have been doing in communities around our state and that they stand ready to do around our state if we can lower the barriers to their access. And I hope that's what you'll choose to do today. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Next, we'll hear from Kateri Ruth with Great River Greening. Apologies if I mispronounced.
Good morning. No apologies needed. My name is Kateri Routh. I am Executive Director with Great River Greening. I just want to start by saying we stand in support with the bill as it stands, with a community grants program and with everything you've heard from other partners this morning already. What I'm going to do is simply highlight some of the projects that have received this impact already in the communities and habitats that have been supported. Stretching from the metro to St. Cloud, we have a program called Pollinator Central. We're working to improve critical pollinator habitat on 40 sites with 26 partners over across nine counties, improving over 660 acres. We are also including Minnesotans as citizen scientists with this project. This work benefits pollinators, of course, but it also reduces maintenance for cities and counties as we convert turf to resilient prairie. In southern Minnesota, we received multiple grants through the trust fund to work with farmers on sustainable agriculture practices. This includes adding continuous living cover crops to farmers' rotations, as well as improving savanna and woodland habitats with grazing animals, a process that's mutually beneficial for both farmers' operation and the environment. In central Minnesota, we're in partnership with the Crow Wing Soil and Water Conservation District, restoring 90 acres of habitat to health and resilience within the Camp Ripley Sentinel landscape. With this, with trust fund dollars, we're able to leverage additional matching support, and with the matching support have brought over 120 high school students to the work on that project site. Great River Greening is about to start a new LCCMR funded project that will pilot the implementation of portable biochar kilns. This process reduces carbon emission in the management of wastewood. We'll demonstrate this process as well as share it with other service providers. It's spreading the benefits of this process. Environment and Natural Trust Fund grants bring people together, more funding and partners to the table, creating an even bigger impact on green spaces, wildlife, the community, and the outdoors throughout Minnesota. Trust fund dollars simply make this critical work possible. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Our final testifier is Chris Stevens with Frogtown Green.
So he actually wasn't able to make it today,
okay.
Sorry.
No problem. All right, and that completes our public testimony, so we'll turn to discussion of the bill. First up is Representative Robbins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Vice Chair, for bringing this bill forward. I have two different sections of question. First, it's of great concern to me and some of the communities I serve that the opportunity for using some of this money for wastewater treatment facilities is going to be taken away. Can you explain why you're doing that?
Vice Chair Hollins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Robbins. I can. So I know that there have been several attempts over the years to use these funds for things that would otherwise be capital investments, like wastewater treatment facilities and even other capital investment projects. And so they didn't meet the criteria that is otherwise described in the Environment and Natural Resources Trust Fund. And in fact, most recently, I think in 2018, the legislature did use some of these funds and for capital investment projects, and it was later addressed and walked back by the legislature in 2019. I believe there was even a lawsuit involved in that because it was not appropriate use of the funds. And so that was the reason why we put the particular clause in there. We just want to avoid a situation like what happened previously where they weren't being used appropriately. And I know that at the risk of expounding, I know that Representative O'Neill asked a similar question in Ways and Means. And I just want to reiterate that, you know, the protection of water, especially drinking water, which is included in the question, in the ballot question, is still really being addressed by the trust fund. In particular, when we talk about groundwater and how our groundwater, what we do on the land seeps into the groundwater and how that is impacting people's access to clean water. And so that's the reasoning behind it. I think on a really practical level, we could very quickly deplete this trust fund and any uses of it, especially with the amount we're allowed to draw, if we start pulling into wastewater treatment plants because they cost a substantial amount of money, as I'm sure you know. And so that's really not what we want to spend all of the funding on. We want to make sure that it's distributed primarily for research, but also for projects that directly impact the air, water, land quality in Minnesota.
Okay. Follow up?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for that. And I do understand it could overwhelm the other projects, but I would say that, you know, there are a lot of communities that are, you know, treating sewage and it goes back into the water, and it is really about the water quality. So maybe there'd be a way to find a balance where some of these projects are allowed, but I think just to say never is unfortunate. And then, if I may? And then just one more clarification on subdivision 4 about administrative expenses. It looks like the DNR can keep 5% and the grantees can keep 5%. So we're really allowing 10% of this money to be allowed for administrative expenses. Is that accurate?
Vice Chair Hollins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Robbins. I believe that is accurate. It is 5% because the DNR has the oversight, and we built in a lot of oversight on this with clawbacks, reporting requirements, et cetera. to make sure that we were doing our real fiscal duty and making sure that this money is spent correctly. And that was the request from the DNR, that we make sure that they administratively, since we're putting this on them. Originally, it was envisioned that these community grants would go through community partners, but in order to be as responsible as possible, we decided to put it through the DNR instead. And as part of that, they asked for funding to be provided. So 5% from the amount that is dedicated to the community grants would go for administration of those community grants. And then the 5% is the 5% of whatever that organization gets in order to administer and provide for, you know, the use of that grant.
Representative Robbins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you. And I do want to call out my great support for the guardrails on the grant-making process. I think it's a model for other ways we do grant-making here. So thank you for doing that.
Thank you.
Representative Nash.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Hollins, my questions are really sort of around, let me get to the page. I just had it. The community grant-making process. Some of my questions were, and I'm not trying to be cute, but there was a group of criterion in there that I don't understand, like places that are losing agriculture, underserved, and the one that caught my mind was without indoor plumbing. That one was curious for me. That's line 3.14 through lines 3.21. And there's a lot of things listed there: agriculture loss, building loss, wildfire risk, low incomes, high energy, and so on. How are those things going to be calculated in order to move forward for grant scoring, if you could?
Vice Chair Hollins.
Thank you, Chair Long, and thank you, Representative Nash. My understanding is this is language that was taken from the federal census tracking information, and that information is provided through the census tracts. So I don't know if anybody involved in the administration has a better sense of how that works, but I'm happy to. Mm-hmm.
Anybody else want to speak to that?
And Mr. Chair, maybe we can.
Representative Nash.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And maybe we can just figure that out before it hits the floor. As you know, I ask a lot of very detailed questions. That's just one of the things that I found particularly interesting. Bless you. I too am a hunter and a fisherman, and I do appreciate the work that's done here. My principal objection has always been with the acquisition of land. I feel sometimes it's a little bit too much, that it takes things off the tax roll. But I will also tell you I appreciate the inclusion of the guardrails. And my last question to that end, Mr. Chair, is that the totality of the amendments that we've been putting in other bills as we've been moving along, or is it more or less than the amendments that we've been adding into the fiscal bills?
Vice Chair Hollins.
Thank you, Chair Long. Thank you, Representative Nash. I can't speak to what other bills have done. I know that this was a very collaborative process between the stakeholders from the environmental organizations as well as the DNR, and we worked really closely with them about what they wanted to see and how they would feel most comfortable administering these grants, and that's what we came up with the language.
And Mr. Chair.
Representative Nash.
Yeah. This was something I think that the leadership of both caucuses and the Senate agreed to, and this was the grant amendment that was being added into all the fiscal bills. And I think that that's quite detailed and puts up good guardrails that are in sort of compliance with the OLA reports. So if it is, fantastic. If there's a little bit more that we could do, then I would also appreciate if we went that extra mile.
Looks like Chair Olson might be able to answer your question. Chair Olson.
Thank you, Representative Long. And good question. So it is based roughly off of like what was added. So you're talking about the budget bills, what was added in Ways and Means that you helped, and Representative Garofalo and others. So yes, it is that plus what Representative Holland said, a little bit more specific to what will be happening within this bill. So yes, you're right, Representative Nash. It's based on that plus more.
Okay. Representative Torkelson.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Very interesting topic of discussion, one that I've not been involved with this particular biennium, but have been
involved. Aren't you glad you got on rules?
In the past. I'm so glad, Mr. Chair. Nice to actually have testifiers here for a change. It's a real pleasure.
Just for you.
And I have a number of questions. First, the change in the appropriation from 5.5% to 7%. And it looks to me like you're adding that extra 1.5% to cover the community grants proposal that's in this legislation. Is that correct?
Vice Chair Hollins.
Thank you, Chair Long. Thank you, Representative Torkelson. So actually, that increase in the amount of pull was already being discussed before we had the community grant. So I carried this bill last year, and we didn't have a community grants program developed yet. It was something that we were interested in, but we hadn't actually fleshed it out. And they were already increasing the pull from 5.5 to 7%. So that was something we had discussed previously, simply because the demand for funding from the trust fund is so great, and there are so many projects that come through the LCCMR, and the number that we're able to fund is significantly smaller than the amount of money that we have. But it certainly would help the community grants program as well.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. So, you know, this program is designed that there be a corpus that is virtually permanent, and that the what we withdraw does not damage the corpus. So, are you confident that raising this percent will still protect the corpus?
Vice Chair Hollins.
Thank you, Chair Long, and thank you, Representative Torkelson. That is my understanding. I'm not the math person. I'm a lawyer, so. But I have talked to the people who are in charge of the trust fund and the staff for the LCCMR, and they feel confident that it will maintain the corpus.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Hopefully, I don't know that we have anybody here that can answer that question this morning, but I will explore it on my own. The demand is limitless, by the way, Madam Chair. There is no end. The demand will increase exponentially as the money available increases. I'm confident of that. My next question has to do with the question on the ballot. We have new language here, 2.6 to 2.10. But what I don't know, and what I, if I had been a little more up to date, I maybe would have explored this myself, but how does this language compare to the language that was on the ballot in the past?
Vice Chair Hollins.
Great. Well, thank you, Chair, and thank you, Representative Torkelson. That is a fantastic question, and if you had asked me about a month ago, I would have told you exactly what the language was previously. I don't remember off of the top of my head, but I believe that it is changed slightly to be more specific. I think previously it had said it was much more general, like just quality of, I'm looking at it and I'm like, I think it was like improve air quality, improve water quality, expand access to parks and trails. And we tried to make it a little more specific to give people an idea of what water we're talking about. We think like the average person they're like, what does that mean exactly? And so we wanted to say, you know, rivers, lakes, streams. And this language has actually been changed several times over the process of even this year. But my understanding is this is the language that has been worked out by the coalition. It is the language that has been proposed and has been pulled on, and it is language that, you know, that people respond very well to.
Representative Robertson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, thank you for that answer, Chair Hollins. You know, I think we all know that this is likely to be approved by the voters. The voters in Minnesota have supported this sort of thing in the past. But what I'm concerned about is, do they really know what they're voting for? You know, you just expressed that the language has been carefully constructed so that it'll be user-friendly, so to speak, and they're more likely to vote. But is it really, you know, are they really getting what they want? I don't know, and I would sure like to compare that language to see, you know, this as we've noted earlier in some of these questions, things are morphing here. We're changing some of the emphasis of where these dollars are utilized and how they're utilized, and the question should reflect that, in my opinion. So there is a substantial language in here regarding financial accountability, but is there any language in here that has some environmental accountability? Are these projects, as we fund them, are we evaluating if they actually have an impact on the environment?
Vice Chair Hollins.
Thank you, Chair Long. Thank you, Representative Torkelson. I don't know. I don't know how to answer that question because I am not a climate scientist. So I believe that because we have the purpose language that is included in the constitutional amendment, that we know that it has the public purpose of providing a public purpose of protection, conservation, preservation, enhancement of the air, water, land, fish, wildlife, and other natural resources. I imagine that when these proposals are put before the LCCMR, they are evaluated. We usually get input from the DNR, but you're asking about the output of what comes from these proposals. Is that what you're saying? Like the value that comes from them, is that what you're asking?
Representative Torkels.
Mr. Chair, that's exactly what I'm asking, Chair Hollins. It's a question. I served on LCCMR, I've served on Clean Water Council, I at one time served in the Environment Committee, et cetera. And accountability, financial accountability is one thing, but the question that we were often asked and should be asked is, are these dollars actually having an impact that reflects what is stated in the goals? We've got the financial language here, but I don't see anything here that says, are we evaluating the work to make sure that we're reaching those environmental goals and that we're actually having an impact there, not just on the pocketbook of the fund, but on the environment of the state of Minnesota?
Vice Chair Hollins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Torkelson. I guess my answer to that would be that's beyond the scope of this language, because the people the people who are in charge of where these funds go is the LCCMR. And so I would ask the LCCMR to make sure that that is something. This is really about taking the funds that come from the lottery and making sure they're dedicated to the Environment and Natural Resources Trust Fund. If you're asking specifically about the community grants, is that what you're trying to get at?
Representative Paul.
Mr. Chair, no, I'm speaking of all grants. And just saying, well, LCCMR should take care of it, even that's not stated in here. That we are demand, that we ask, that there be accountability and environmental accountability for these funds. It's a worthwhile endeavor. It seems to me that's what this is all about. I won't pursue that any further at this point, Mr. Chair. Then finally, just the community grants program, you know, I think and this is my first exposure to it, so I apologize that I haven't had a chance to analyze it. But when I look at today's handouts, for instance, and I see long lists of groups and logos and organizations that are all out there working in this area already, and apparently we're attempting to add more by establishing this community grant program. It just, I guess there's not a question here, Mr. Chair, but it just seems to me that these groups that are already in existence, that we already have staff and an organization, couldn't they be doing this work? Couldn't they be helping these community programs access these funds instead of establishing another bureaucracy, taking another 5%? We're really good at creating organizations and funding them. We're not so good at actually getting the work done for the environment. No question there, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Torkelson. Vice Chair Hollins.
I just want to respond to that really quickly. Thank you, Chair Long. Because honestly, that was the original envisionment of the community grants program, was partnering smaller organizations with larger organizations who are already doing this work and having them be like the fiscal agents or be somebody who is working with them to be able to access those funds. But our understanding is that when you do it that way, there is not fiscal accountability, especially for the agencies that are providing those funding. And so because there has been a resounding desire to make sure that we are being very accountable with where money is going, especially state funding, we decided to go through the DNR, because otherwise, the DNR did not feel comfortable with us having partner organizations that were taking accountability, but then it ultimately passes up to the DNR and they are in charge of whatever happens. So that was the reason why we did it the way we did. But I understand your frustration.
Representative Jordan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Vice Chair Hollins, for all of your work on this. I think it's important to note that there's another section of law actually that does talk about LCCMR and how those projects are evaluated and what goes into that. And I also actually see that our LCCMR director, Becca Nash, is in the audience. And I am wondering if she could maybe come down and explain that grant process, how it is existing and how those projects are evaluated and are held accountable to some and evaluated for success and whether or not they should be continued, and talk a little bit more about the process. Because it seems like there might be some confusion here about how that plays out.
I think a brief explanation would be helpful. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
Good morning, members. I'm Becca Nash. I'm the director of the LCCMR. Just as an overview for the process, we have an annual request for proposal that goes out, and the request for proposal includes priorities for protection, conservation, enhancement of air, land, water, fish, wildlife, and other natural resources. There are priorities that the LCCMR has established through their strategic plan. That strategic plan is required every 6 years to focus those priorities. Anybody across the state is allowed to apply for funding, and we do have an extensive evaluation process for those proposals. First, they're reviewed by staff for completeness and fit and eligibility according to the Constitution and our statute and our priorities. And then those proposals go to the commission members, who evaluate it against an established 10-point criteria that have been developed over the years. Proposals then can are invited to present before the commission, and the commission is allowed to ask questions and address any concerns. And then another evaluation process occurs, and the top projects are selected for recommendation. Any of the research projects that are proposed for recommendation undergo extensive external peer review as well. So these are anonymous peer reviews by experts in the field all over the world, quite honestly. We try to seek people outside of Minnesota to avoid any conflict of interest. And then those recommendations go to the legislature for funding. And then once funded, projects are required to complete work plans that spell out their specific outcomes and accomplishments that they are planning to reach through the process. And then they are required to report back to the LCCMR every 6 months on their progress and on their spending. And then they do also submit a final report. And we do try to get those results out and make those outcomes available for all to view. They're on our website. We also have a weekly email newsletter. So we are trying to get out the word about what those projects are accomplishing. We do site visits every 2 years to follow up on some of those projects to see some of the results on the ground. And then we also work with the media as well to get the word out about what those projects are accomplishing.
Thank you, Ms. Nash. That was helpful. Appreciate it. Further comments, Representative Jordan?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. And thank you, Director Nash, for coming up and excuse me, reminding us about how this all plays out. I think there's always a lot of discussion about how LCCMR can play out. And I really think that what Representative Hollins has done here with the Community Grants Program is emphasizing those organizations that don't have the same kind of ability to fill out all of those extensive forms that Director Nash was talking about, that are important for making sure that we are funding things that are successful, impactful, and accountable. So making sure that we have these processes in place for people who have never been able to access this money before is really critical. I've heard extensively from my constituents and from Minnesotans across the state that this funding in the past has gone to larger organizations with extensive staff that have received these grants in the past even. And so making sure that everyone can have this access into it is a really great feat. And I want to thank Representative Hollins for her work on that.
Thank you, Representative Jordan. Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I apologize that you may have said this at the beginning, but I was distracted by there was no sound in the room. So can you just let us know generally how much money goes into the fund?
Vice Chair Hollins.
Thank you. Hold on. I've got that note. Okay. Thank you. So the expectation of how much goes in, I know that how much goes out is about $79 million with the 5.5%. I think how much goes in depends on what lottery sales are like, so it kind of varies.
Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah, it's a hard number, I'm sure, to estimate. I just wanted to get a sense as to how much money we're talking about, because you did talk about Representative Robbins was talking about changing the structure of it and not having it available for wastewater treatment or drinking water projects because it's used up so quickly. I just wanted to get a sense. I forgot to ask you that in Ways and Means, like how much money we're talking about. So that's helpful. Okay, so I'm wondering, you talked only very, very briefly sort of about the process of how the community grants are done. And I see you're setting up a community grants advisory council with 11 members. Two of which are from the Ojibwe tribe, two members that are from the Dakota tribe, four members who are identified as Black or African American, Hispanic or Latino, Asian or Pacific Islander, or another member of a community of color, which is 8 of the 10. So as this group comes together and they kind of go through sort of the applications, it sounds like they're making recommendations to someone in the DNR. What happens after that? So once they've gathered up all of the applications, it kind of looks like they're reviewing them. And if I'm not correct, please correct me because I'm trying to understand how this works. Then it goes to the DNR, and then what happens?
Vice Chair Hall.
Thank you, Chair Long. Thank you, Representative O'Neill. Well, I'm going to bring our DNR representative up to talk about this because I think we are in the process of working through what that is going to look like. We wanted community input, and we wanted folks from these unrepresented areas to be part of the decision-making process. But also, I know the DNR has ideas about how to move forward. So,
Ms. Robinson.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, thank you again for having me and for the question. So, big picture, I would say about 20% of DNR's budget currently goes out the door in grants. We have about 50 different grants programs across the department with a wide variety of models. So we're well practiced in grant programs across the board, including working with LCCMR in those cases where LCCMR dollars pass through the DNR. In this case, this is clearly, as everyone knows, a new grant program. And so a lot of these details haven't been fully vetted or worked out yet. We would work, not to say that they're not thoughtful, but we haven't gotten that far along the process in terms of how the grants actually will be administered in the different rounds. We would work with the council that's established in this law to come up with those details according to, of course, best practices, as well as the Office of Grants Management Policies. The DNR follows all state policies, of course, related to grants management, as overseen by the Department of Administration and the Office of Grants Management. And so we would, within those parameters, work with this established council to work out those details.
Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, that explains why I couldn't find it in the language, because I was like, okay, there's got to be some sort of further process other than just standing up this advisory council, the Community Grants Advisory Council. And I don't see in the language, and I probably missed it because we're all very tired. It's been a long, many, many weeks of 16-hour days. Can you tell me of that $79 million that went out? That's just, you know, the number you just had given me. What percentage or what amount of that do you expect to go for community grants?
Vice Chair Hollins.
Thank you, Chair Long. Thank you, Representative O'Neill. So if you look online, it's 3.23, so is where it starts, the appropriation. So it's 1.5% of the market value of the Environment and Natural Resources Trust Fund is appropriated to grants in that grant program. Mm-hmm. So I can't do math.
Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, I did see that in the... That's different than, because you had said $79 million had gone out in the past in total for the from the trust fund. So this is more of, I'm just wondering, like, specifically for the community grants, is there a percentage? Is there, it's not going to go out in totality now. And I don't think we're changing the entire trust fund to all be community grants, unless I'm misunderstanding that. But is there going to be a proportion of that $79 million as an example that you gave?
I think Emily Adrians might be able to help out here.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative O'Neill. So the nearly $80 million that Representative Hollins referenced, that's the amount that goes to the LCCMR currently. So that accounts for the 5.5%. And so we have estimates for an additional 1.5% of that corpus that we're talking about. That could amount to somewhere just over $23 million a year. And so it wouldn't impact the 5.5% that currently, you know, that amount would continue along, and then the 1.5% would be in addition to that.
Representative O'Neill.
Thank you. Thank you, Ms. Adrians. That's very, very helpful. I just wanted to get a handle on what exactly, sort of what are the dollars for the community grants. Okay, so we don't know the process just yet. All right, let me just, the other question I had was when I was looking at on page 2, when it's got the exact language that will be on the ballot, which I suppose is probably the most important thing in this committee, and you had said that it had been pulled and it was this is the language that was the most positive response or very positively responded to. But one thing that was in almost every testifier that came is they talked about environmental justice, and in fact, there's quite a bit of deference given to communities that are negatively impacted by all kinds of sorts of things, as I believe Representative Torkelson or maybe Nash had pointed out. It was Representative Nash. It's communities disproportionately affected by ag loss, building loss, wildfire, low income, high energy cost, rates of asthma, rates of diabetes, rates of heart disease, low life expectancy, high housing costs, lack of green space, lack of indoor plumbing, persistent lead paint, proximity to hazardous waste and related facilities, particulate matter exposure, and so on. There's a couple other things. So there's a very heavy emphasis moving forward that are social justice, environmental justice, but that's not in the language at all. And if it's $23 million approximately that will now be going for community grants of the 80, that's a pretty high percentage. And I'm just wondering if there's going to be like a floor amendment or something. I'm kind of surprised you didn't bring an amendment to maybe include those types of words in the language that goes on the ballot so that people understand that it's there's a lot of environmental justice and social justice baked into this new the community grants moving forward.
Vice Chair Hollis.
Thank you, Chair Long. Thank you, Representative O'Neill. So the first thing I'll say is the vast majority of the funding is still going to just standard what it's always been going to, right? The percentage of the money that is going to community grants, which does focus on that particular area that you just read, is a fraction of the amount that is going to the standard Environmental and Natural Resources Trust Fund, LCCMR, grant program. We also don't mention the LCCMR in the submission to the voters because that just confuses the issue. We know that voters care about the environment. And so one other thing that I really want to emphasize, because I've been getting some strange and angry phone calls about this. Community grants is still for grants that go to dealing with the environment and natural resources. It is simply a different way of getting at that issue. And so whether that is for communities that have been historically left out or communities and organizations that have been a long-standing partner, you know, and getting funding from the LCCMR, it is still going towards the environment and natural resources, which is why the submission to voters, I would argue, is exactly what it needs to be, because it's still addressing water, wildlife habitat, air quality, et cetera. It's just whether it's being directed towards those organizations and areas that have been historically funded or those organizations and areas that have not been historically funded. But it's still the exact same, you know, focus and effort.
You have a final question, Representative O'Neill?
Oh, I might be a couple more. Thank you, Mr. Chair. So it says that you're establishing a priority for projects, which is the list I just read, for the DNR. So it says you must prioritize these things as I just read off. And that's on exclusive, or it's on an inclusive list. There's a few other things I didn't mention. Mm-hmm. But if that's impacted only for the community grants, that's still 30% of the money going out. I would call that significant. It's not insignificant. So anyway, so you're not going to add those words in, which I would think would be a plus for people to understand where it's going, what it's doing. I will make this a final question since you did say final question. So if you could let us know, and nobody really stated examples of what community grants might fund. I know that there were some really interesting things I thought was really kind of cool from just what had been done in the past, which is some pollinator work, cover crops, including grazing animals, all these things that I think are fantastic. So I'm wondering if you could let us know what are some projects that the community grants specifically would go to do.
Vice Chair Hollins.
Just examples.
Thank you, Chair Long. I don't know that I'm the best person to give examples of this. I'm saddened that our Frogtown testifier is not here because he could probably give better examples of this. But certainly things that have been thrown around are increasing green spaces, educational programs for underserved youth, ways for people to get out and experience the outdoors and conservation efforts, trying to make the environment and our natural resources accessible to everybody from every walk of life and from every area in Minnesota, and making sure that what we are doing in our conservation efforts within the metro or within certain areas, rural areas, are getting as much attention as, the places that the U of M cares about or the places that, some of our larger organizations are really focusing their efforts on. So I don't think I could give you specific examples of them, but I will say that there are a number of organizations that have come to us talking about how they want to get more involved and how they have community members who want to be more involved and who want to have that green space and be outdoors and really, don't get the opportunity to be a part of it. And having access to this funding is going to make a huge difference for them.
I'll just note as well that we have in our packet a community grants program one pager that has four or five different examples of potential uses for the community grants programs. Leader Damuth.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Vice Chair Hollins, for presenting your bill and for inviting others into the Rules Committee today. Just a couple of notes. I appreciate in the bill the reporting requirements and then that additional financial accountability, as you've heard from my colleagues. I definitely appreciate that. One of two questions on line 8.12, where it talks about the sub-grants. Could you just talk a little bit about that and how you would see that playing out? I'm not as familiar with the sub-grant portion on 8.12.
Vice Chair Hollins.
Thank you, Chair Long. Thank you, Lead Damuth. I'm going to defer to my DNR colleagues regarding the sub-grants provision.
Welcome back.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm sorry, I missed the section that we were referring to. Could someone please?
Subdivision 6, page 8.
Mr. Chair, it would actually be 8.12, the subdivision 7 on the sub-grants. Just wondering a little bit more information on that.
Thanks for the correction.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, so Mary Robison, Chief Financial Officer for the DNR. I did want to again speak to the different financial assurance pieces in this bill because they do come from different places. The DNR has worked with Representative Hollins and others working on this bill regarding the language under Section 3 and related to the Community Grants Program and how that will be administered. The financial assurance pieces that have been since added to that, as I think others have mentioned, are actually legislative pieces that have come from the House and Senate and been added across bill areas into a number of bills. And so I just want to make it very clear that the DNR has not been involved in the drafting of that language or the authorship of it. I will say with regards to that section, it does refer to sub-recipients. In this case, the community grant program is not using a model of sub-recipients. And in fact, that is something that the DNR prefers not to do and has worked with Representative Hollins to step away from, because as the community grant program money would be appropriated to the DNR, we are ultimately accountable for the use of those funds. And it was so I, not just as an agency, but myself as the CFO, I would be professionally responsible for the use of those funds. And so we as the DNR would want to administer those funds directly to the organizations that are receiving those grants. That is not to say that we would not work with the other organizations that have been part of pulling together this bill. There's certainly been a broad coalition of, as you've seen, of organizations that have come together to design this community grant program. And there are roles that those organizations can play in helping support smaller organizations, such as acting as fiscal agents, 501c3 support, et cetera. But it is important to the DNR that we, as the cognizant agency, maintain that direct responsibility with those ultimate recipients. And so I do want to make clear that while the DNR has not authored that particular subdivision, this is not a situation where we're having subgrantees exactly for that reason.
Later, David.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for the explanation. So if I'm understanding this, the agency then, as we see on 8.13, mm-hmm. the agency is referring to, and I apologize if I didn't see the definition earlier.
So the question is, what is the agency referring to on 8.13? Ms. Robinson.
Yes. So, Mr. Chair, thank you. The section that begins on 8.12, I believe, refers to subrecipients. And again, this is in the section of the bill where there is a broad language on grant administration being put in a number of bills, including this one. My belief, although I haven't been involved, is that that is intended to increase controls around cases in which there might be subrecipients, which is, I would say, a somewhat risky grant structure in and of itself, where agencies pass money on to other organizations who then administer that money. So that's the intent of that section. Because I haven't been involved, I don't feel comfortable speaking more directly to the authorship of that section, but that's the intent. And again, just to clarify, that's not the case in the community grants program. The DNR would be administering those grants directly to recipients under the community grant program as discussed.
Later, Dave.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for that answer. And then I do have one final question for Representative Hollins. Representative Hollins, can you, as the priorities are laid out, and I believe it's in the third 3 point, I'm not sure where it is right now, as priorities for these community grants are laid out, will there be any intent to make sure that there is a geographical balance within these? And I don't see that listed. Just wondering what the intent might be, if at all.
Vice Chair Hollins.
Thank you, Chair Long, and thank you, Representative Damuth. Lead Damuth. This was something that was taken under consideration when we were originally working on these, working on this grant program back a year ago, which feels like a billion years ago, to have geographical equity. And what we decided was that we wanted to take the language that was here with the census tracts, because we do think that it has broad application. You know, as you see, there are some things that might be more metro focused, but then there are other things that are definitely more rural focused, wildfire risk, agriculture loss, things like that. And we thought that that really got at what the goal of the program was for those places that historically have been underrepresented or not participatory in this particular program would be able to have access to it, instead of saying like 50% here and 50% there, which might not actually play out the way we want it to. And so we wanted to make sure that everybody was incorporated based on the census tract data, as opposed to choosing hard numbers.
And it does look like the advisory council has geographic distribution requirements. All right.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Vice Chair Hollins.
So you were going to be our last leader, Damuth, but Representative Torkelson, so excited to have questions in front of here so that he snuck back on the list. So one last question, Representative Torkelson.
Got permission from my leader, Mr. Chair.
Okay, all right, good. Glad you
just
did.
Just two quick comments. One, you said earlier, Chair Hollins, that this was a small percentage, but actually, according to my math, I'm not a lawyer or a mathematician, I'm a farmer, but it's 21% of the new allocation is going to this community grants program. that is significant. It's large for a brand new program that is somewhat of an experiment, I would say. That's just a comment. My question is, much of this work intersects with the work of the 3/8 cent sales tax. Did you consider how these two funds interact when you put together this proposal? I'm talking of the Clean Water Fund, the Parks and Trails Fund that are part of the legacy.
Vice Chair Hall.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Torkelson. So I'm not on legacy and I'm not on taxes, but what I will say is that my understanding is that the legacy fund is significantly different from this. I mean, it includes arts and creative things, and it's significantly different, and especially because LCCMR and the Environment and Natural Resources Trust Fund really historically has been around funding research on how to better the environment and how to conserve, you know, our wildlife. And so I would say that my understanding, I'm not an expert, but my understanding is those two funds really have significantly different reach, and that because of that, this is still an incredibly important program.
Thank you, Vice Chair Hollins.
Mr. Chair, I just have to point out, it says it's not one word about research in the constitutional question.
Thank you, Representative Torkelson. Sure. That concludes our bill discussion. Vice Chair Hollins, would you want to have the final word before we move to a vote?
Just thank you all for the time and the discussion. I appreciate it.
All right. Vice Chair Hollins renews her motion that House File 1900 is referred to the General Register. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
No.
The motion prevails. House File 1900 is referred to the General Register. Thank you, members, for a good hearing today. With that, we are adjourned.